Welcome to the Criterion Quest, a continuing podcast series looking at important classics and contemporary films. My name is Chris and I am joined, as usual, by my lovely co-host
Hello.
Tom. And we finished watching a double feature episode. We haven't had one of these for quite a while. Probably I Am Curious, Yellow and Blue?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. We watched two Amano Omi films, Il Posto and I Fidanzi.
That's right, we did, Chris.
So, The Place and The Fiancés.
The Fiancés and The Place.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I will say, though, these films came as a much-needed respite for me because I've had nothing but a Halloween-y kind of horror movie binge fest all weekend, so...
That's by choice?
By choice. By total choice.
Okay.
Yeah, I got a chance to go and see Suspiria, the new... the remake of Suspiria done by Luca Guadagnino.
Yeah, was it nice?
It's one of the best films I've seen this year.
Okay, excellent.
So I'm like... I am an unabashed fan of the original Dario Argento Suspiria, and I'm also a huge fan of Luca Guadagnino. Like, Call Me By Your Name is, like, one of my favourite movies, if not probably, like, my second favourite film of last year. Probably just, like, Brigsby Bear still tips that.
Yeah.
But it's, like, a dude who made, like, you know, was nominated for an Academy Award and so, like, made a film that was not for Best Picture and, like, all this stuff, like, the height of his powers, can do whatever he wants. He's like, I'm going to remake Suspiria, a film about an American girl who goes to a ballet school run by witches, and I'm going to make it 2 hours and 40 minutes long and insane. What's that? Yeah, sure, I'm going to cast Tilda Swinton as an 85-year-old German man.
Yeah. That's such a good choice.
Oh my God, it's so amazing. Like, I'm just using this platform to be like, everyone, go see Suspiria.
And you saw Halloween as well?
I saw Halloween as well, which was fine. It's
but,
fine.
But not bad.
Not bad, but just not...
Reasonably good.
Reasonably, like, it's fun. It's fun. Whereas, just, like, Suspiria just, like...
Yeah.
That shit is insane and not for the lighthearted, like... Came out... I went and saw it with Eric, who I do the other podcast with and is a frequent guest on this show. Like, we came out... we recently went and saw the original Suspiria on, like, a 4K digital, like, a 40th anniversary screening. He'd never seen it before. And he was like, yeah, that was great. And it's still in Australia is rated R, like 18 plus, the original one. And this new one was rated MA 15 plus. And we came out of it being like, that's like the most hardcore film I've seen in, I don't know how long. How was that like, The Hateful Eight is rated R. And that's not like, this is, this goes balls to the wall with like.
Is it gore? Is that? You mean violence gore-wise, or...?
Like, genuine scare, like, just witchcraft and demon shit, and... Like, I'm trying to do this as unspoilery as possible. Mm. Like, one of the most hardcore things that happens in the original is a girl falls into a pit of barbed wire, and that's pretty hardcore. And in this, it's just like, nope. Just like the stuff they show on screen is like, okay!
Horrific.
Yeah. Plus a Tom York score. I love Radiohead. Why not?
Yeah, he does a fucking great job.
Yeah.
So, yeah, horrors are back.
I don't have a problem with that. As
Me
long
neither.
As they're good. Like, this year has been great for horror movies. Like, between, you know, Suspiria, Halloween, Hereditary. I guess you could count Mandy, like the Nicolas Cage mindfuck. Like, that is a horror, I guess.
Yeah.
A Quiet Place is really solid. Like,
even mainstream with It and stuff.
It was last year, though, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's last year. I don't know. Time is a fucking circle. It melts. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a kind of reaction to what Disney's been doing with Marvel.
But there's still, you know, always
kind
been
of a superhero, even when they are dark, they're still kind of silly, fluffy things.
True, and there's been like a slew of horrible horror movies, like, you know, Happy Death Day and shit.
Oh, I agree. Like, yeah, and the Paranormal Activity stuff is a while back, but that's
I think it's like
a failure.
Blumhouse, like that kind of company that like has been helping. He started the whatchamacallit, the Paranormal Activity movies, but then he's kind of moved away now that he has like billions of dollars to be like, no, it's actually made good horror movies, and so far so good. I'm enjoying this renaissance.
Yeah, it's about time we had a fucking change.
Yeah,
in the mainstream.
That's it, and like actually getting, like I said, like, you know, you look at the last couple of years, and you've got like, you know, Get Out. horror movie being nominated for Best Picture winning an Academy Award for Best Script. Like, it's actually getting interesting, talented filmmakers to make horror movies, like, which is why I was so in for Suspiria. It's like, the dude, a really balls-to-the-wall horror movie made by the guy that made Call Me By Your Name, like, the 80s period piece love, like, gay romance story in the south of Italy. Like,
yeah, he's versatile.
Yeah, oh my god, yes.
So we should start talking about horror films now, because we're going to talk about...
Yeah, can you tell we don't really want to talk about all me films?
No. Well, back to the topic. They're okay, these ones. They're both quiet, gentle little films from the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, should we start with Il Posto, I guess?
Yeah.
Synopsis, who wants to do this one?
I can do it.
Yep.
give me some names that I forgot.
I say his...
Il Posto stars young boy.
And young girl. Domenico.
That's right. Domenico and the girl.
Antoinette.
Domenico and Antoinette. So Domenico is a young man who is from a poor family, and he is tasked with going to get a job to support said poor family by working as a white-collar person, trying to jump into that career movement, office work, rising to the top. And in so doing, he does get a little job that has the potential for becoming a career. And he meets a young girl who is also looking for a job and from a poor background. A friendship becomes to be a thing.
Yeah, they seem to be somewhat enamored with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But of course, I mean, the whole film is just following this little tiny relationship amongst the white collar. It's almost like an oppression. The white collar calling.
Yeah, the backdrop for this little, like, I'd go so far as to call it like a romance, for lack of a better term, like, or this kind of chaste romance.
Because it's the two young people.
Yeah.
So young that they're...
And they clearly, like, based on how they interact and their body language, like, they clearly like each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, in that...
But it's pre-adult romance, almost.
Yeah.
Which just adds to the kind of gentle loveliness that the film can give you. So there's two aspects. One is this lovely romance,
this innocence, and
then there's these sequences of disgusting. Well, that's probably my own mind. putting words on the white collar situation.
It's the idea. It's essentially a film presenting the twofold thing. It's like this young, idyllic kind of innocence being thrust into this kind of, I'd say, soul-crushing
mechanical
idea of the what is to be a middle-class worker.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's solid. I got a distinct Fellini feel out of these films. Like, this one in particular, I think, because of the young nature of the protagonist. But, like, in the sense of it's just following... It's a very innocent film, this one. And that's predominantly what we're following. It is a young man who's ill-prepared and unwillingly kind of thrust into this world of being an adult now. And he's not quite sure what he's doing, how he's doing. And there's no one really there to show him or teach him. And he's just kind of floating through and... meets another younger, like, meets a kindred spirit that's also kind of similar, like, floating in this new pond, I guess.
Yeah, but the film does a really good job of, that's the theme that I think is a great thing. But
yeah.
The film does do a good job of having these almost repetitive sequences of the samey, same old same, which works when you're talking about the mechanical nature of a white collar job. But I also got my experience was a little bit boring, only because, I mean, I'm kind of torn, right? The visuals are really quite beautiful, and, you know, he's chosen to do black and white in 1961 film, just to kind of illustrate. I mean, it works with the job.
Yeah,
it's a drab job, so the but then again, so you can have sequences where it's black and white really works in these office cubicles and office hallways where it's just boring. But at the same time, black and white works really well when you're having these romantic gathering between two people.
Yeah.
But it was drab.
Okay.
It was kind of drab. It was kind of... The flow wasn't there. In both of these films, there is... Like, there is a trudgery in terms of narrative flow. The only thing that's saving them to me is... the visuals,
okay,
the camera work, what the compositions are like, and
so you didn't relate whatsoever with Domenico as a character, like I do.
This is what weirds me out.
I find that interesting then that you found it so drab, because like I agree in the like with you that it they're very slowly methodically paced films. Mm-hmm. I think is a better way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was at no point did Il Posto lose me. I was. Continuously engaged and interested in, like, where is this going? I feel for this kid. I want to see what happens. Whereas I Ife Dancer kind of lost me to a bit, but we'll get into that later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I understand the plight. I mean, I fucking can relate to the plight on a personal level.
I wasn't necessarily connecting with the plight. I was connecting with the wide-eyedness of it all. Like, the young kid being thrust into a situation that he... And, like, kind of forcibly shoved into adulthood, I guess. And then he's essentially wandering through this film almost like a puppy. Just being like, what am I doing? Where are we going? What's happening now? Oh, there's a friend. Like, and I kind of connected on that, like, emotional level as opposed to, like, the Brazil-esque, like, nature of the working. Like, it could have been set anywhere. Like, I didn't... Like, it works so well that it's set in the white-collar kind of industry, but he could have been going on holiday, and yeah. I would have had the same emotional kind of connection, I feel.
But the whole film is him just floating through as a puppy dog.
Yeah.
So, what I'm suggesting is that it's just my opinion, but the whole film, if it's all, the whole film's like that, then... It would tend to drag if there's no character development.
Yeah.
The working situation, there's moments where I mean, there's a sequence... Okay, here's a good example of why I reckon...
Mm-hmm.
Why this film is kind of good and bad at the same time. Remember the sequence towards the end where one man retires?
Yeah.
And they're cleaning out his desk and he's in the... This is...
I got the sense he died.
Oh, he died or something.
Yeah, because they like he left his novel that he's working on.
Oh yeah, personal stuff.
Yeah.
So the room that they work in is very much like a classroom as well.
Yeah,
you know, it's like the supervisor at the front, like the teacher looking at everybody, and everybody's got their own desk, and they're separate from each other, but they're all facing the supervisor.
And you've got the two guys who are like an Abbott and Costello routine up the back, like yeah. The buddies and.
And depending on how high you are in the ladder, it's the closer you are to the front of the room. And so when this fellow dies at the front, everyone's ready to move up. They put young Domenico at the front. But
see, it's funny. Like, I found that sequence hilarious because I thought... I got the sense that that's... In no way is that a rule. They've just self-imposed that rule on themselves.
Well, but that's a... Well, yeah. I mean, like, the comedy comes from the idea that they've all... Like, they've created this illusion that exists.
Yeah.
I really didn't get the impression... On a technical level and on an actual
authority level. Yeah, on a bureaucratic level. Like,
who cares a shit where you're sitting?
Yeah, it's just do your job.
These people are just so obsessed with climbing that ladder.
Because that's what they've been promised in this kind of world that they've accepted, yeah.
And they've been in the system for so long that they've attributed the front of the room to be the most important thing. Doesn't matter about...
Yeah, it makes absolutely no difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They put Domenico at the front,
mm.
Then a few people at the back start fighting over whether, hey man, like this guy really hasn't, he's just new. Like, why is he sitting at the front? I got to sit there.
And so I've been Domenico, here 20 years. My eyes are going blind because I have to look at a lamp.
Like, and Domenico's like, oh, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm young.
Again, puppy dog being like, okay, whatever.
That's right. And this is the end of the film. So he's still just kind of reacting to stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess because he's so naive and young and... It doesn't give you the...
There's no arc for the character.
No. It doesn't give you the inclination that he might turn into these kinds of people.
No.
Which I thought might have been more interesting.
could have. I kind of held out hope because, like, knowing that the film is, like, I went in kind of doing, like, with a little bit of reading up on it, like, knowing that the film is making a statement on the kind of mundane working nature. So I was kind of viewing all of these scenes of him kind of being introduced to this world as not necessarily rejecting it, but being like, oh, well, this is the old guard. I'm going to be, like, I'm not going to end up like this. But, like, we never know because he doesn't even talk much in the film.
No, he doesn't talk much. So, yeah, so it's so what kind of person really is he? I'm not too sure. I know that he's young, naive, and ready to play around with, like, a romance because, you know, I mean, you're a kid and that's what you do.
He's a kid. He is a kid. Like, there's a scene one of the first scenes in the film is, you know, he's working up early and his brother's doing his study because he has to go to school and he's got to now go to work, and he starts chastising, like, getting in a fight with his brother, like, hey, you stole my book belt. And the mother's just like, shut the fuck up, you're going to work now, like, you don't need this. But he's still trying to hang on to those kid-like things of, you know, fighting with your brother over something really stupid, like, you're borrowing my fucking whatever. And, you know, the idea something that he used to use for his school stuff is the idea that that's no longer his, and he's having to be forced to move up in this world. And he just gets really quiet then, and just kind of, that's when the puppy dogness kind of all kicks in. And, like, going, his mother takes him to buy a raincoat for his work, and he's like, I want the fancy one. And I was like, no, goddamn. Like, it's like a kid shopping for a fucking school uniform or whatever. Like,
I did really like those sequences as well. Yeah. When the two, Domenico and, what's the fucking name? Antoinette.
Yeah.
They're both bonding in the streets by window shopping, basically, on things that they may never even get to buy. But it seems like that system that they're inside, everyone is attributed well-being and success to owning the best coat, owning the best car, eating the best food. So,
I kind of viewed the film as these two young kids who are unaccustomed to this world being thrust into it, and it's them either adapting to it or not. Like, there's the scene where they go and they're like, oh, I'll buy you a coffee because I guess that's what we do now. And then that kind of, like, there's that sequence, and then that's kind of followed up later in that evening by him trying to buy her a gumball, like, the kid version, and the machine's broken and it won't work, kind of, again, forcing them to be thrown into this adult world. But it's the film never necessarily makes a definitive statement on whether or not it's good or bad that these kids are being thrown, like, forced, you know, you're adults now. It's just kind of presenting it as, this is a fact of something that happens.
Mm.
And you relate to it how you relate to it, I guess.
Yeah. They're not, the kids are not necessarily resisting, nor are they jumping headfirst into the system.
They are just blindly going into it and reacting blindly as well. Like, the only glimmers of kind of emotional, like, resonance you get with them is when they're together and they're trying to make a connection as these two people. Like, it's, again, it's like a childlike romance, I guess. And, like, he goes to the New Year's Eve party in the hope that she'll be there, and, you know, it's all this stuff. Like, he's going the corporate, going to the company New Year's Eve party because she might be, like, yeah, it's great. It's
advantageous.
Yeah.
So then does it mean, so then what the fuck is the film trying to say then? Is it trying to portray them as outsiders? They're part of the system, but they're also running, kind of like running in parallel to it. Almost.
Yeah, but that's what happens when you're a new person thrown into a new system and you don't quite know
how to slot in.
Yeah, either try and slot in or you haven't quite figured out yet if you are going to slot into the system or you're going to rebel against it. It's that kind of sweet spot where we're essentially getting a glimpse, like, it's almost a week or two in the lives of these people, like, in this very interesting transitional phase in their life. And I think that's all the film is doing. It's not necessarily trying to make a broader statement on that. It's just trying to encapsulate that period.
Yeah.
And I found it really fascinating to watch.
Well, certainly the end sequence, the dance, is fucking fascinating.
That's kind of starting to lead, like, the New Year's Eve dance, you mean?
Mm.
where you see him starting to, like, sitting with the elderly couple and being in, kind of invited and ingratiated, and then by the end of the night he's had a few drinks and is full-heartedly dancing like a madman.
Without Antoinette, who did not come.
Yes.
So it's kind of a sour ending.
And then that scene is punctuated, like, that's the second to last scene, because the final scene is him taking over the dead man's desk. So it's kind of, yeah.
So I read from that, right, that Antoinette decided to rebel in the end and go, like, I don't want to be part of this system. Whereas it seemed like Domenico's like, I'm prepared to be a part of the system. I just want to kind of continue running parallel and look for those opportunities to break away slightly.
Yeah.
So I guess it's actually quite a successful film in that regard, because I can look at the system presented to Domenico and I don't hate it. It's not completely unnatural. It's not completely natural either, but the film allows you to watch without having your own kind of resistance or your own, basically a bias.
Mm.
So I don't know. It's kind of a confusing mess in my mind slightly.
The film also has one wonderful sequence that we haven't talked about yet, that it's about like 50 minutes or so, like, you know, kind of almost the midway point of the film, we're presented the people in the office that Domenico ends up working in. And it's just all of a sudden cuts to these people. We're not introduced to them. We have no idea who or what kind of is happening here. And we just follow them for like 10 minutes. And it's them in their work environment, how they work together. And then the film takes a couple of minutes to show each of these people what they do after work, showing that like one's a singer, plays piano, one's writing a novel, and it's the film takes great pains in at the halfway point essentially to be like, yes, all of these people are within this constrained system, but they also have fulfilling lives outside of that, and they've all have their own separate little eccentricities and their hobbies and their things that make them uniquely them, that even though you can be bogged down in a really shitty white collar system, it doesn't mean that you're not still your individual person. And that's a wonderful sequence that happens in this film.
It's very positive.
Yes.
It's very positive.
That's why I was saying I got a kind of Truffaut feeling from this. Like, I guess to some degree as well, like having a teenager, like, you know, teenager as your protagonist helps. But that sequence in particular, it's like this wonderful little break in the middle of it to be like, we're kind of being really, sending this really heavy-handed message about, you know, it sucks to work, but you can still be, we're also showing the individuality that still exists within people.
Well, it's still painting the system as something kind of unnatural. It's just lucky that you can clock off.
But it's also saying the system is not the be all end all of life.
That's right. That's right.
Which is the nice positive aspect of the film. And you get the sense that, like I do at least towards the end, that Domenico is going to, if he chooses to adopt that system, will find his, you know,
he'll be okay.
Yeah.
Just as all these other people have
because the film has shown us the people who are like lifers in the system are still okay.
Yeah.
So.
But then what does that say about Antoinette, who's hasn't shown up to the dance, which would be to me a symbolic of her rejecting that whole system completely.
Mm.
There's obviously some people that are full outsiders.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
Sucks to be Domenico.
Yeah. As long as he finds his thing that makes him still him. Yeah.
Well, but that was Antoinette, it seemed.
No, but I think Antoinette, like, shows the idea, like, what happened, like, she's the side of the coin that decided not to stick with that. And is, like, and the problem is when she's not our protagonist, so we're not really following her story, we're following Domenico.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could hope that, like, it's the 1-2 punch of her not showing up at the dance and then, you know, taking over a dead man's head, like seeing the realities of the world, that he might not do that. But at the same time, the film does the effort to show that if he does decide to stick with it, it's not going to be his be-all, end-all.
Gee, it's a fucking interesting movie.
It's not bad, right? But that's what I mean. Like, I was engaged by this one.
Yeah, okay.
It had a lot, like you said, it is dull. Like, there are sections where you just sit and watch him do a math quiz. Like, his aptitude test and stuff. Like, it's a very slow and methodically paced film, but there's these little nuggets in there that make it kind of interesting. And, even though it is slow, I never lost interest. I was always like, where is this going? What's this doing? I want to know what happens to this guy. I dug it. I dug it way more than our second film.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Should we shift over onto Fidanzi.
Okay.
Something like that. The Fiancés. Should we shift over onto that one, or?
Yeah.
Was there anything else you wanted to cap up on Il Posto?
No.
Okay.
That one's going to be continued in my mind for a while, I think.
Okay. I'm intrigued then to see, like, if you tag up in, like, the following weeks, being like, I've been thinking about this, and it could come back on our, look back on the 10 or something.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
But Il Fidanzé, so 1963, so 2 years after Il Posto, Olmi's made this film about a man, a welder for a, like, industrial company who is engaged and kind of, living his life, and then gets given a job opportunity to become superior worker.
Specialized
worker, thank you. And so he essentially moves away from his fiance and his known life to this new area to make a go of it for the betterment of his career. And it's essentially a man debating if he's made the right choice.
Yeah, I think it's a series of months away from his fiance.
Yeah.
This time tackling blue collar and, I guess, at the midpoint of your career cycle as opposed to the beginning.
Yeah.
So I can see why they would... a nice duo to put together.
Yeah.
And
it's also about the kind of reflection on if you're making the right decision or not. That's essentially what the film... Which I suppose as well, Il Posto is to some degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this one definitely drags.
Yeah, and it only goes for an hour 17. It doesn't even go for 80. It's 77 minutes, and it drags. Not necessarily in a bad way. I suppose you can never... Like, if it drags, it drags. That's not a good thing. But it's incredibly beautiful to look at. The visuals in this are great. But it just takes a long time to say not a whole lot.
Well, maybe we can unpack it a bit more like we just did with Il Posto. But again, what's it? Giovanni? Is his name Giovanni?
Yeah.
Giovanni is the protagonist. He, similar to Domenico, he's kind of not necessarily floating, but he's definitely he's almost like a fly on the wall as he travels through Sicily, and you don't get an impression that, there's a lot of inward thought going on, but you're not necessarily privy to it.
No.
So it starts off with another dance sequence, similar to Il Posto as well.
Yeah. But this time they're throwing the talcum powder on the ground and these people are going to get crunk.
Yeah. And you can actually tell that the fiancés are, their relationship is kind of waning slightly.
Yeah, well, the way he's framed it is brilliant, actually, how they're both on the far extremes of either the far left or the far right of the frame, obviously showing a great distance between them. And so you can kind of, whether or not that's him, showing kind of why he's going off on this, taking this opportunity, because it's establishing, right from the first scene, that this is not necessarily a relationship that is...
Doesn't seem strong.
Yeah, they're at a dance. He asks her to dance, and she says no, so he has to go and dance with someone else. It seems like they are just in a relationship because they've been in a relationship and they're engaged. Like, you don't necessarily sense any intimacy between them.
Yeah. So he decides to leave as a result of an opportunity.
Yes.
Which is going to probably now have a negative effect on the relationship.
Yep.
But I guess, it seems like it's implied that, again, they are doing their best to just work with the system. And it might have like negative effects. But for, I mean, so he goes off to Sicily in the next 40 minutes, an hour.
I think we checked. It was around the 40 to 45 minute mark that he's just to turn.
He's just, I mean, he's not, he arrives in Sicily and he's just kind of walking around.
Checking into his hotel, goes and has a coffee, inspects the factory, meets his new boss. And I think the film taking its time and like, you know, walking around the empty town and things. The film, it's beautifully shot and it's doing a really effective job of painting it as a bad decision. It's essentially showing the loneliness of his decision. Like, he's by himself. He's just wandering empty streets. He's walking around the factory by himself. There's an isolation to it all. And then it kind of shifts a bit into this kind of... At about the 45-minute mark, then it kind of shifts gears into the fun aspects of it.
Well, I guess...
Of like, this new town and, like, the place, and he starts meeting people and making friends and goes to this weird Oktoberfest-y type dance thing and...
Yeah, some kind of carnival thing, yeah.
And it's only at these point... It first starts when he's in the church and the kids... The dog runs in and the kids get all happy. He's just like, oh, well, this is a town. There are people that live here. This isn't an isolated, I'm sleeping in a motel at the factory. And that's the first time music kicks in as well.
Yeah, that's a really important sequence, actually.
Yeah.
Because right before the dog comes in and interrupts the whole church gathering, the pastor is saying, you know, when you're in church, you got to be a certain way, and you can't laugh, and you got to do your prayers and whatnot.
Mm.
And, you know, all the kids are like, oh, yeah, no worries, until the dog comes, and then they just kind of go crazy.
And then shit is wild.
Yeah. And I think you could take that minute little moment and apply it to him being inserted in his new job and his career as well. So
he's feeling like I have this opportunity to better myself. I've got to be presentable. I've got to be, you know, quiet. You know,
I can't laugh. I've got to be serious. Got to work.
Yeah. And then he's shown this kind of, you know, example of, it's like, no, you can still be human and that. And then, you know, music kicks in and he starts seeing the lighter side of this town that he's moved to, and the possibility of this change that he's made in his life is not necessarily a bad one.
But at the same time, he is... this film is really good at doing this kind of cutbacks, these flashback moments to him going through his brain, reminiscing about, hey, that relationship that I did have with my fiancée was actually quite lovely.
Yes.
So...
And again, music is the cue for... Music only appears when it's something that's either romanticized or a kind of joyous moment in this movie.
But, yeah, but... Yeah, I'm fucking... Still too slow.
It's incredibly slow, this one. It's unlike Il Posto. The protagonist is a guy who has made the decision to upend his life for a career. Like, it's something I just can't connect with. It's something I wouldn't necessarily do in my life, so I can't connect with it. Like, the idea of abandoning someone you theoretically love because you could get a better job. Like, I can't. Whereas, like, Il Posto, the kind of wide-eyed innocence of entering a new world, I can connect with. Whereas this dude, I was just like, you're this welder, man.
Yeah, like, but at the same time, I think the couple genuinely thought that it was going to be a betterment to them.
I don't think she's in total agreement with it, though.
Yeah.
Like, and that's kind of the punctuation of the film, is that, like, this wonderful sequence where them basically talking through all of their feelings and actually vocal and saying, like, we never used to talk, we kept things bottled in, and now we're actually finally vocalizing the issues that we have, and this is great, and this was a great idea for us all. I can't believe it, we've worked it out, yay. Oh, this was a dream. Like, this was in his head, his fantasy of how it was going to go. And then it's just punctuated with him awkwardly on the phone with her while a ominous thunderstorm is happening. So it's... The film is essentially saying, like, don't. stick with your fiancés. Don't necessarily...
I don't know. I mean, there's... Let's talk about the imagery that he's presented with. Because, as you say, he's isolated, he's alone, he's walking through Sicily, and it seems like to him, in his head, it's just a fucking bummer.
Yeah.
But then the shots that we see, remember that there's those wonderful salt piles?
Yeah, yeah.
The people, there's workers building these salt piles in these massive rows, columns.
Almost like a rice paddy field, almost.
And they're workers, right? It's just like they're doing their hard work.
Yeah.
But there's really a very lovely beauty to
image. It's like a pastoral kind of image as opposed to the industrial of what we've been seeing.
Yeah, so although it's made by like the hard work and the fucking sweat of people's brow, there is a beauty to it all.
Ooh.
I mean, and it's kind of lovely to look at, so... Shit, what were you saying before? I'm going to try and fucking...
The idea that he's possibly... The film's kind of ends on the down note of him making Yeah.
So it is... So I'm feeling like if it's, a complete bummer that he is like, shit, I fucked up. I made this wrong decision. But then throughout the whole film, there's these pepperings of beauty. No, well, yeah. Not sorry, saltiness, sorry. Though. Not saltiness.
No, I mean like mounds of salt.
Mounds of salt.
Yeah. Sorry.
So, it seems like, although you can look at his situation poorly, mm-hmm. there's constant reminders of a beauty around.
Yeah.
So, fucking, I don't know.
It's similar to Il Posto in that idea that even though you find yourself in a bad situation, there is some good that you can find within it.
Both films end in
semi-pessimistic.
On the face of it, it's a fucking shit ending for the protagonists.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there is this kind of silver lining to it all.
Mm.
With Domenico, it's that there is a real possibility because everybody else seems to be able to do it. That is, doing their job and living a full life. And then... all the imagery in... I'm not going to pronounce the other one.
Ifidanzi.
Yeah. All the imagery in that is... although the story is a fucking bummer, the imagery is really pretty. And he does pull it in.
He does accept the place that he's found himself in. Yeah.
The carnival sequence is just him going like, fucking yeah, fuck it. This is... You know, I can make this an awesome trip.
Yeah.
An awesome working trip.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not convinced. I haven't even convinced myself.
Well, is that interesting that then the two films, like, as kind of counterpoints to each other, one's presenting the idea that you can find relief from the working world through character and, like, characters, essentially, is what we're presented. And then the second one is presenting it through imagery, like, being able to, like, showing that we can find that.
Yeah, but... this is only my view.
Yeah.
But I think overall it just kind of bums me out because it's... because both of them bum me out because they're both suggesting that these career things, whether it's white collar, blue collar, whatever, you can't change it. You can only live with it. You can only get through it.
See, I don't view... I view Ifidanzi that somewhat that way. I don't view Il Posto that way. That moment where... only takes the time to show us that they are still like the work. Yes, they are within the system, but the system is not everything to them. Like that, that makes that film kind of have a twinge of hopefulness and kind of playfulness to it. Whereas Ifidanzi just is somewhat of a bummer.
But I still think Il Posto. It sounds like it's suggesting that you can't change. The work, whatever's between the work hours, knock on, knock off.
Mm. That's not what's important.
Yeah, I know. I know. Exactly. It's not important at all.
Yeah.
But I still...
and the film's presenting that, I feel.
Yeah, but it's also saying that you...
yeah, but everyone has to fucking...
change it. I know. I know.
Yeah.
It's hard to change.
Yeah. But if an auntie, like... beautiful, beautiful imagery, lacking, I think, in the the kind of, again, it's a floating protagonist, but it's one I personally couldn't connect with or didn't find an inroad with, I guess. So watching him as on his like meandering journey of discovery, I guess, whether it be good or bad, was a little bit less than Il Posto for me.
Well, now I just want to figure out how to break the system. That's what my pull away.
We just got to burn it down.
That's my takeaway from these films.
Burn it all down.
I just want to be on holiday 100% of the time, Chris. That's all.
Good luck with that. That's why the lottery exists.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, do you want to hear a little bit of trivia about these ones?
Okay.
So Il Posto won the Sutherland Trophy at the British Film Institute Awards. And it also won the Parallel Sections Award, the Passanetti Award at the Venice Film Festival, as well as the OZIC Award and the Award of the City of Imola.
OZIC.
At the 1961 Venice Film Festival. So it's a fairly well-regarded film, this one.
Sure is, Chris.
Yeah, sure is. director Amano Olmi went on to marry the female lead of Il Posto. No, female lead.
Okay.
Antoinetta Loredana Detto, and she never made another movie again. And she was just like, "Yep, no, I, yeah, sweet, happy with him." And like Domenico, Olmi clerked in a Milanese, I guess, in Milan. That's how Milanese company for over 10 years. So he'd done that job that essentially the character ends up in, and then so he could, again, parallel, I guess, like Olmi, he was able to break out of the system and do something interesting and creative with his life.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But yeah, that's really it for Il Posto in terms of trivia. And for I Fidanzi, it won the OCIC award at the 1963 Cannes Film Festival, where it was also nominated for the Palme d'Or. It didn't win that.
Okay, it's a hard thing to win.
Yes. Only one film a year gets that. It's a tough prize.
It's very exclusive.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess unless you've got anything else that'll wrap us up for these two films.
I'm good.
You good? We'll talk about the Criterion editions themselves. So Il Posto is still in print from Criterion as a one-disc DVD. And it comes with the special features of Rare Deleted Scene. Singular. Reflecting Reality, a new interview with filmmaker Amano Olmi and film critic slash historian and occasional Olmi collaborator Tuolo Kedzik. Lakoto, aka, like, translated as The Crush, Olmi's 1967 short film about a young boy's first love. Theatrical trailer. Ooh, we haven't had one of these for a while. Restoration Demonstration. And usual...
The poster was a really good restoration.
It was. It was. I actually was floored by how good that looked. Mm. So, yeah, and the usual booklet and essays that Criterion usually do. And I Fidanzi comes... It's still in print as a one-disc DVD. Comes with Mysteries of Life, a new video interview with filmmaker Amano Olmi and film critic historian and Olmi contributor Tuolo Kedzik discussing I Fidanzi, as well as theatrical trailer and booklet and essays and all that usual jazz. Yeah.
Which company produced these films?
Tidanus.
Oh, yeah.
Tidanus. You can tell we're really mature men in our 30s giggling at tit anus. Yeah. But I guess, unless we've got anything else, that'll wrap us up for this week's episode. We're back again in a fortnight's time with another double feature. Staying with some Alain René films. Oh, God, I'm so tired. I'm going to try that one more time. We've got two Alain René. I don't know why. When I get to the filmmaker pronunciation, I get all tongue-tied.
Dude,
and
we should just like get an app that we can just type it in and then we put the mic to
I've had to say his name before on the podcast. Like, I know how to pronounce Alain René. Like, it's not not hard.
That's like, that was an easy one.
I know. Why was I struggling before?
I don't know.
Anyway, we've got a Hiroshima Mon Amour and Night and Fog. We're going to do those two in our next episode. But, yeah, I guess tune in for that and hopefully get some more 10-8s. Who knows? Yeah, but for this week's episode, thank you for listening. I'm Chris.
I'm Tom. See you next time.